1977. Between October of that year and February 1978, they raped, tortured, and strangled to death 10 young women and girls, dumping the bruised and stripped bodies mostly on hillsides northeast of downtown. During Thanksgiving week alone, 5 bodies turned up, the victims ranging in age from 12 to 28. That was when the panic set in. These 5 were linked to at least 3 other killings. In December, another body was found, nude and spread-eagled on a hillside facing City Hall, as though the killers were making an obscene and defiant gesture toward the city itself. After the new year, it appeared that the killers had had their fill. They were at large, but by the end of January, the city began to breathe a little easier, and stories about the hillside murders dwindled in the newspapers and on television. But then, in February, another body. This an 18-year-old girl stuffed into the trunk of her new car, which had been pushed over a cliff high on Angeles Crest. The panic renewed itself. Public anger turned on the police, who, despite a task force numbering nearly 100 officers, seemed baffled. Women, if they had to go out at all at night, hurried from their cars to what they hoped was the safety of their houses. Yet one victim, a student at the Pasadena Art Center of Design, appeared to have been abducted from her own apartment. Another had apparently been dragged from her car parked just across the street from her parents' house. The victims seemed to have been picked at random and from various parts of the sprawling city: Hollywood, Glendale, the San Fernando Valley. No neighborhood felt safe. The killer or killers might strike anywhere. One victim had been waiting for a bus in Hollywood. Another had last been seen leaving her Glendale apartment in her car to go to work. Nor were the victims alike in appearance or occupation. One was black, one Hispanic, the others Caucasians ranging from dark to fair. The first 2 and the 8th victims had been prostitutes, the others students and working women. The killers appeared indifferent only to the old, otherwise their tastes were Catholic. Then, abruptly, the killings stopped. Had the strangler or stranglers simply had enough? Or were they afraid of getting caught? Would they resume their spree once they thought the heat was off? The police had made a couple of arrests, but these suspects proved innocent of the hillside murders. The first anniversary of the first killing passed with no important, nerve-flaying questions answered. Not even the actual site of the murders, if there was one site, was known. Psychiatrists offered psychological profiles of the killer or killers, but their opinions were contradictory, linked only by the theme of hatred of women. In January 1979, the case broke. The younger of the stranglers, Kenneth Bianchi, had moved to far northern Washington State, where on his own he had strangled to death 2 more young women, college students. He had left several clues and was arrested immediately by local police. His driver's license showed a Los Angeles address, and when the local police telephoned the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Office for a background check, a primary investigator on the Hillside case happened to take the call. He knew immediately from Bianchi's L.A. address, which was identical to that of one of the Hillside victims, that at least one of the stranglers had been caught. From there, it was easy to find the other, Angelo Bono, a Glendale auto upholsterer who was Bianchi's cousin and only close male friend. But the ordeal for the police and for the city, apparently over, had only just begun. Bianchi, an articulate young man, at first denied everything, and then supposedly under hypnosis, displayed the classic manifestations of a multiple personality. He apparently revealed that an alter ego, whom he called Steve, had committed the murders, of which Kenneth knew nothing. A third personality called Billy later emerged, and possibly a fourth and a fifth.